Hey, I'm Tom Power. I'm the host of the podcast Q with Tom Power, where we talk to all kinds of artists, actors, writers, musicians, painters. We had Green Day on the other day talking about their huge album, American Idiot. Nicole Byer came on to talk about ADHD and comedy. And then there's Dan Levy. While we were talking about filmmaking, we talked about his insecurities.
I sometimes feel like I have this desire to, like, perform, to be a version of myself that people might like.
Listen to Q with Tom Power to hear your favorite artists as they truly are, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Okay, we're about to go to Granville Island's public market. It's like a bazaar. There's fish, and there's fruit, and there's like a little pottery sometimes.
Right now, Mark, Ryan, and I are on a field trip with our producer, Dave, to get some inspiration for our romantic comedy.
We are looking around at romantic settings at Vancouver's most romantic setting itself, which has many little settings within it, Granville Island. You can't spell romance without Granville Island.
I once saw a seagull eat a pigeon right outside there. True. In the water.
It sounds like such a hellscape. It's so nice.
And it really is. Granville Island is a busy tourist spot on the water in Vancouver, and it's exactly the kind of place you'd film a rom-com. It's got it all. Couples on rollerblades, flower vendors selling roses, romantic restaurants overlooking marinas, a bustling market area.
So you come over here and there's all these fruits, but you can't buy them because they actually cost $200, but they're really pretty.
Granville Island has so many possibilities for love, and that's the reason we chose it for this field trip. It would be the perfect place to set a rom-com. Although the biggest movie ever shot here was Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, which is not the vibe we're going for. Anyway, each of us picked a different part of the island that we think is the most romantic. Mine is the market.
You know what I think is romantic about it here? It's like there's a good din, so you can really talk about people and they won't notice, and that's cute. When you feel private and public, that's always romantic. Also, when you're like being observed as a couple, you know what I mean? The guy at the butcher's like, hey, you two sure seem in love. You go, we're not there yet.
Hey, are you two married? This is a married-only butcher shop. Like a motel in the 50s.
Next, we went to Ryan's choice.
So this is my choice for romantic place. We're right down in the marina, right on the water, where boats dock, but also the dual effect of under the wharf, which is like secret area.
Isn't that your Star Trek fan fiction that you wrote called Under the Wharf?
Yeah. Yeah, it's highly sexual.
It made us wonder, what if we incorporated a boat as a setting in our movie?
Boats, I find, either one of the most romantic movies of all time, Titanic, about a larger boat. All sorts of boat stuff happening on that. Being on the thought of travel on the open waters, anything is possible, including drowning. I've been on a party boat that actually goes around this very harbor, and I had a romantic time. I met someone, it was like a romantic connection on a boat. Because you're trapped. You're also trapped when you're on a boat. You can't get off.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I guess trapped is usually a bad thing in most when you write down trapped. But I guess you have to make the best of it. Can't get off. Can't go to another bar. You're on the boat.
And after the marina, we headed over to Mark's romantic setting of choice. A grassy hill away from the crowd.
Have you had any romantic dates, romantic moments here?
That's our producer, Dave.
I have. With my now wife. When we first were kind of seeing each other, I was in town visiting, and we sat very close to where we are here on a bench at midnight, and it was cold, and I put my hands into her sleeves, and we sat and we talked.
Mark's spot was really pretty, but the thing about it is there's always the potential for something to come along and kill the mood. A garbage truck picking up a dumpster, a gardener with a weed whacker, or, in our case, a weird boat.
Oh, here's another boat.
Here comes a big pirate-looking ship.
Oh, yeah.
Holy shit.
You ever done that?
A pirate-themed kids' adventure ship floated up, as it apparently does 6 times a day. That's a thing here. A bunch of kids began shouting at an actor in pirate garb who was sitting in a small boat in the harbor.
What are you doing in my ocean?
And started spraying them with water cannons. But I guess that's what romantic comedies are all about. They can't be romantic all the time, because who would want to watch that? Some comedy needs to come along to knock the romance down a peg.
We're on a hill, a grassy hill. Share a kiss, turns into a roll, pick up some speed, find yourself launching into the water. There you go, romance and comedy.
today on the show, we're trying to figure out the right balance between romance and comedy. It's Let's Make a Rom-Com. Last season on the show, our goal was to make an earnest science fiction pilot. That word earnest was a big part of the challenge. We're three comedians who have a hard time writing anything that's not comedy. This season, we're writing a romantic comedy, so that's a different challenge. The word comedy is right in the name, so we should have an advantage. And yet, it's an uphill battle. All we really have at this point is our romantic leads, Greg and Catalina. And they're sort of funny, I guess, but not really. They're likable and their dialogue is flirty and charming. But what's going to make this a comedy? Side characters. Kooky best friends, weird neighbors, overly familiar delivery men. Because when you watch a romantic comedy, you want to fall in love with the couple. But if the world they're living in isn't funny, it just feels like a Hallmark movie. That's why we need side characters. They're connected to the main characters' journeys, they facilitate the story, and maybe even give life advice. Think Awkwafina in Crazy Rich Asians.
Do you want to stop by for some dinner?
Oh, no, I couldn't impose.
No, it's not a problem.
You know, I had some dinner plans.
Seriously, we've got a
lot. Yeah, I'll fucking come to dinner.
Carrie Fisher in When Harry Met Sally.
I've got the perfect guy. I don't happen to find him attractive, but you might. She doesn't have a problem with chins.
Arsenio Hall in Coming to America.
Amen, praise the Lord.
Iconic. But before we make our side characters, we need to know what makes a good one. What are the elements that make them go from generic quirky best friend to iconic quirky best friend? So we called up an expert.
Hi, I'm Karin Somi. You might know me from movies like Deadpool, Office Christmas Party, Ghostbusters, the one with the women in it, and a bunch of rom-coms.
Karin has played many, many, many side characters. Assistants, delivery guys, office workers, including a couple of roles he shot here in Vancouver.
I've done actually a rom-com in Vancouver, Always Be My Maybe, where I did play the friend.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And of course, Deadpool, right, was filmed here.
Yes, another famous rom-com.
Karin is probably best known for playing Dopinder, the doormat taxi driver in the Deadpool movies.
Dopinder, I'm starting to think there's a reason I'm in this cab today.
Yeah, so you called for it, remember?
No, my slender brown friend, love is a beautiful thing.
Maybe Deadpool is a rom-com. Karin says he's come to love playing side characters.
Yeah, I think a side character in a rom-com is the best part because they get to be funny. I think the best side character is the best example is Melissa McCarthy in Bridesmaids, which isn't really a rom-com, but like is a perfect example because she's unhinged. She has like her introduction is that she like had sex with a dolphin or something. Like that's insane. Like there's nothing grounded about that. Like, she is just completely, like, you know, just crazy.
And I swear to God, that dolphin looked not at me, but into my soul, into my goddamn soul, Annie, and said, I'm saving you, Megan. Now, with this.
But then the trick is that there's always one scene where she's grounded and has, like, a dramatic, or the character has, like, a dramatic scene. So when she goes over to Kristen Wiig and the third act or beginning, end of the second act, and she's basically like, get your shit together. And she gives this like motivational speech and she's like, shows you some of her inner life. You're like, I love this person.
Now you gotta stop feeling sorry for yourself. Okay. Cause I do not associate with people that blame the world for their problems. Cause you're your problem, Annie. And you're also your solution. Right? I mean, that's, you get that?
But they can only do that once. After that, they have to be batshit crazy. you know, that's the trick, I think.
Okay, so, good side characters are batshit crazy with just a tiny bit of heart. Got it. Let's brainstorm with that winning formula in mind.
I've got a few, like, one-scene characters and a few, like... So I've got it all over the place. I've even got, like, unnamed characters.
Actually, we realized we already had one side character. Catalina's loser, improviser ex-boyfriend Mark, who still lives in her apartment. Mark and Ryan were really able to pin down the details on him.
Mid-30s. Mm-hmm. Where you know, people who are like in an improv group, people start going like, you're in an improv group.
Yeah.
So real.
Yeah, it's very real.
I think he's like lived a bit of both. I think he's lived a full life, but it's been also like isolated in one world. Do you know what I mean? Like he's like, went to the Berlin Improv Festival. It's so real.
Yeah.
And like that was a big accomplishment for him, but like it's not real, real. And like, like he hasn't like done anything like substantial.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's funny. Like I think he's
deep,
you know,
deep down. If he he's got a haircut.
If he's 32 or 35 and he spent his life doing improv, like he's got something. Right?
And we also had some ideas about him having a girlfriend.
So I have a girlfriend character for him called Breath with an E at the end.
Yes.
And she has like lots of advice for Catalina. She's a bit insufferable, but she's nice. Like she's kind of like she's like, you need to stop drinking coffee. It's probably why, you know, it's like you think it's doing well, but it's just killing you.
That's funny.
And also it's probably why you have bad skin. So she's like,
she's like a little bit, insults. A little bit of an overshare insult, sort of left-handed.
Here's my pitch for Breath. She's the most basic girl in the whole world. She just goes to her job and she comes home and she goes to the gym and she watches The Office on Netflix watches it for Jim and Pam. She thinks everyone else is too weird.
Oh my God, that's I love that. Also, she should have a really nice apartment on her own, but she's
always there. Yeah, she's a facialist.
That's good.
And she is criticizing Catalina's skin a lot.
Yeah.
She's always like, can I do an extraction? Okay. Roommate/ex-boyfriend Mark and Breath are in Catalina's world. We then came up with some people who work on set with Greg and Catalina. If you recall, Catalina is the continuity person on a movie. This is someone who ensures people and props are where they should be in each shot. And we're thinking Greg is the caterer on set, at least for now. Anyways, who is around them?
I have a director character.
Yeah.
Fun.
And his name is, I've named him Forrest Foster. Foster Wallace. Goes by Foster. And he's like super posi-core. He's like, he's into the doctrine of like just like constant positivity. Everything is positive. So when he fires Catalina, it's like, we're giving the opportunity for you to work with other people. And like, you just like, everything has a positive spin on it. Nothing can be negative.
And like, things can be going like horribly wrong.
Oh yeah.
And that'd be so annoying as continuity too. You'd be like, this is wrong. And he's like, that's awesome. You're bringing that to my attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had the other continuity guy, like her assistant.
Oh, nice.
And he's just awful.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's the director's son.
Nice.
And useless, and he's so, like, stoned and spacey and just, like, a classic.
And Catalina has a crush on him.
Him and Catalina used to date. Actually, she could have already slept with them. Totally
That'd be hilarious.
Yeah.
And she's like, what?
Oh, God, this is the worst. I had maybe she could have a work friend, possibly. So, like, I, like, thought it would be cool to have, like, a young, hip, cool boom-op named Trish. And Catalina almost looks up to her because she's like cool and like no problem can phase her, like really actually funny, like a fun little her best work friend potentially.
I had a friend of hers as well.
Nice.
And it was the hair, key hair,
yeah.
And she's Irish and she's always vaping.
That's really
good.
Yeah, I like that. I like her having a key hair friend, and I like the Irish vaping angle for some reason. It really works for me.
Of course, it's so
I can really
good.
See it. She's got really long fingernails too. Really ornately
a lot
done.
Of fake tan. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's all the on-set stuff I have. Okay, what about Greg's world? Greg's next-door neighbor.
Nice. So like in Greg's orbit, maybe. People in Greg's orbit.
And here's what I got for this. Yeah. Okay? Yeah. Short and sweet. I'm going to say it, and you guys are... It's been a mic drop.
I got a good one.
Okay.
Yeah.
A cool, hip nun.
Okay. Now we're talking. So she's not living in the nunnery. No. She's out in the town.
But everyone's always talking about the cool priest. Oh, that's cool, I'm a priest. Yeah. This is a cool nun.
Yeah. So does she wear a habit or no?
She wears that cool habit that the modern ones wear.
Yeah, okay.
The one with the spikes.
What's her name? Sister something or rather, I imagine.
Christina.
Sister Christina.
Sister Christina.
And she's always like, Greg, can you turn the music up?
We also had a bunch of little characters that we like that might grow into something big.
Tim Dowell, 50s. He's the alderman for the ward where Greg's grocery store is located. He's desperate for Greg's endorsement in the next Chicago civic election, but Greg won't give it to him because of key social issues. So Dowell starts to try to sabotage Greg's grocery store.
Ooh. My pitch for the star of the movie that Catalina and Greg are working on is an extremely old woman.
Yeah.
Very mean. been in Hollywood for a million years.
Nice.
And the story in the movie could be her having an affair with like a 20-year-old guy,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of just funny, echoing in our thing.
Oh, yeah.
I have one called Inappropriate Paramedic.
My only other character is Salty. He's the captain of the Filthy Carcass, which is a children's pirate-themed party boat.
Member?
What are you doing in my
house? I'm saying this to you now. Do not forget the pirate party boat. It will become important. And then there was one character that we fell in love with.
Okay, here's one. A guy named Zeta Trigonometry. Any age.
No one's last name is Trigonometry.
An unpopular busker who performs math magic.
Oh, okay.
Often in front of Mark and Catalina's place. Question mark, maybe he's in Mark's improv troupe. Question mark, maybe dated Catalina in the past. But he's Zeta Trigonometry and he entertains kids with
math. I love
math.
This.
Math
I love
magic.
That. And he's like, wow. Hold on a sec, algebra.
Yeah.
Let me grab that.
We don't know how he fits into the plot. We don't know why he would be in Greg and Catalina's world. But Zeta Trigonometry is batshit crazy. And who knows? Maybe we'll find a way for him to have a little heart-to-heart with our main characters.
So he's like, A squared plus B squared equals me squared.
And he might even do raps. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like it's a math kind of rap magic. Like,
yeah.
You know people who think like math can be really interesting.
Yeah.
So he does like little magic shows for kids. Very unpopular.
You want to figure out how tall this pole is. We'll take the shadow and then this is what it is. Right?
Yeah.
We came up with so many side characters, and we love them all.
I honestly think all of them are usable.
I do, too.
And they can now be our little, like, people that we can, like, grab and make put to work. That we, like, we need a scene, and it'll be so helpful to have these, like, list of characters just grab from.
But there is one obvious side character we haven't discussed. Can you guess who? I'll give you a second. Her name rhymes with Velma Kayak. We all agreed that it would make sense that she would make a small appearance in our story. But what is Selma Hayek like? If only we knew someone who knows her in real life.
Can I ask the premise?
Yeah, well, we want to give you the whole pitch.
Oh, great.
Should we do that now?
Enter Karin Soni.
Hi, I'm Jessie Cruikshank.
Jessie Cruikshank.
I host the number one comedy podcast called Phone a Friend.
Girl, let's phone a friend.
Not only do I break down the biggest stories in pop culture with guests like Dan Levy and members of NSYNC, I do it with my own personal boy band singing jingles throughout. Because it's my show.
It's your show, girl.
New episodes of Phone a Friend.
Yeah.
Drop Thursdays wherever you get your podcasts.
So work it, girl. Yeah, work it.
Okay, that's enough.
Okay, I'll do it. I'm excited. So our rom-com is centered around the female lead, Catalina. When we were researching for our interview with Karin, we came across some information that is very relevant to our script. So that's the movie. They have to.
And it's called?
Oh, it's called His Ex-Girlfriend is Selma Hayek.
There it is.
Amazing. You know, I have worked with Selma Hayek.
We know.
Oh, really?
That's why let's not talk about it yet, because we want to know everything. Karin played Selma Hayek's assistant in the 2020 comedy Like a Boss.
Did you know that I had a partner when I started out?
Shea Whitmore.
Josh! We don't say that name. That woman and I met in college.
They were freshman roommates.
Josh! Whose story is it anyway?
It's yours.
So what we really want to ask you is, what is she like?
What's Selma like?
Oh my
gosh.
Is
she nice? Will she do our movie?
Absolutely not. No, she is like a star in the sense that she's lived like a million lives. So like an example is we filmed this movie in Atlanta, the one I did with her. And like every weekend I would be like, yeah, I went to this like random restaurant over the weekend. What did you do? And she's like, I went to Drake's house. And I was like, huh? And then she was like, yeah, he just DM'd. And, you know, my daughter's a fan. And so he was like, come to my concert. And he's like, come to my house. And I was like, that's a very different experience than what I had. But she's just got, like, that's just her life very casually, normally. Like, she's just, she's also very much into, she also has this aura around, I think maybe for your script, around other women. So this movie also had like Rose Byrne and Tiffany Haddish, and Selma looks like she's 25 years old in person. Like, it's really crazy. And she swore by this thing from Mexico, some plant that she puts on her face. And it was very mysterious because it grows in the on this tree, but like it's clearly working, but it also sounds really made up. But I was like, something is happening. There's just like a lot of mystery. There's like a lot happening there, which is very interesting. But the biggest thing is that she knows every single person that you would want to know. Mm. Like, and then she has really crazy stories that like only she has. She also gave me an impromptu lap dance one day, which was just to bury her. She also gives really good massages, that like you're meant to lay on the ground and then she like steps on you. I did not get one of these, but I saw them being given to other people.
Did you refuse or did you just not?
I wasn't.
Never have an opportunity.
I wasn't offered. Yeah, I wasn't offered the session.
After the lap dance.
It was like, yeah, I think she tapped out at the lap dance. And she, yeah, she's just like one of the most charming people you will ever meet.
Okay, so we've got our roster of side characters. We've got our main characters. We've even got a bit of intel about Selma Hayek. But we haven't really made a ton of progress on the actual writing of the movie. It's Wednesday. We're in the writer's room. And today, the writer's room actually looks the way you'd imagine it. We've got Sharpies and different colored note cards, and we're writing the plot points and arranging them on a board. We're outlining the whole plot of the movie. And it's going to be a long day, so get comfortable.
We are officially outlining our story.
I got my board. I got my cue cards. I'm going to draw two vertical lines.
Okay.
Okay. That's horizontal.
Two horizontal lines. The movie starts with the setup.
So the one thing I'd say about setup is there's always a sense of there's something wrong with their picture.
That's rom-com expert Billy Murnett again.
Because you're writing a movie where love is going to solve their problem. So the one thing I'd say about setup is try to build in what's the thing that's not quite right for them yet.
In Act One, we see Catalina and we learn things about her. She works as a continuity person in the movies. What's wrong with her picture? She's insecure. She's insecure. What are you doing? You're insecure. She's trying to get a haircut.
She's trying to get a haircut like she can't like decide or she's like... What do you mean?
She's on a like a...
She's in the chair and she's like, I want this. And the girl's like, you can't pull that off.
Yeah.
you have an egg face and this is more of a triangle face.
I like that she's trying to change something about herself.
Mm-hmm. Her love life is a mess. We see her on a date. A bad date.
The guy leaves and comes back and he's like changed his tie. He's like, you're so good at continuity, I didn't even notice I changed my tie.
He tricks her?
Yeah, then he walks out. He's like, you're the worst. You're the worst at continuity.
And she still lives with her ex-boyfriend.
And she tells it to her ex-boyfriend. She's like, I've just dated so many losers. And then she's like, present company included. And he's like, I know, girl. And they high five.
Then we set up Greg. What's wrong with Greg's picture? Well, he's dedicated to his family's grocery store, has no life, and wants to prove he can make it succeed, but...
His grocery store is floundering. He's, like, begging for more time from the bank, trying to get a cheaper order. He's on the phone, you know.
Like, somebody comes in and is like, you don't have enough money. You got to get a second job as a caterer on a movie set.
They have a meet cute. We've already been over that. Yes. We have chemistry.
Yes.
Yes. They start dating and getting to know each other.
They go play miniature golf. They go take a swim class together because neither of them know how to swim.
That's so fucking funny.
They figure it out.
That would take a while.
On a date that they can't, neither of them can swim. And they're like, do you want to go learn together?
Things are going pretty well. There's a connection. But then she goes to work and they have a connection. And then she goes to work and he's there.
Got it.
Oh, classic.
Classic. They keep going on dates. They fall in love. This relationship is perfect. But then, end of Act One, Selma freaking
high.
Bang.
Boom. Wait, orange. Loving this. Great.
Okay, on to Act Two.
Act Two is the launching into the story.
That's screenwriter Kiwi Smith.
Like, what's the very first thing that the hero does now that she's gotten this information?
she's kind of has an unraveling in Act Two. She starts to unravel mm-hmm. based on this information she gets at the beginning of Act mm-hmm. One. So
this has got to, yeah, this has all got to be rising action of self-sabotage, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. essentially.
She's missing the continuity.
She fucks up the job.
On the job. And it's like, it's funny, but it's bad.
What if she's trying to like find information on Salma Hayek from various people on mm-hmm. set? Like someone knows, like maybe there's a, mm-hmm. maybe there's a Jennifer Coolidge or someone who's mm-hmm. worked with Salma. So she like tries to try to pump her for information.
Mm. Or she's trying too hard to look good. So she's wearing mm-hmm. like clown makeup.
This is a bad makeover.
Yes.
She gets a pixie cut.
She I was finally not thinking the, pixie cut.
She mm-hmm. gets the haircut that she tried to get at the beginning. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It does look bad on her.
And it just
the,
looks bad
woman,
on her.
Yeah, the woman tells her not to do it. She gets a
yes. yes. I love that shit. Yeah. Spying on Greg.
She looks through his phone. That's classic.
Yeah, yeah. Grabs his phone.
Yeah.
What an evasion of privacy. Mm-hmm. So I guess we have a terrible person as our lead character.
Meanwhile, Greg is...
floundering? Greg's... What's happening Greg with
Greg? Greg has... no work-life balance.
Yes.
Then, about halfway through Act Two, there's an important thing called the midpoint, which is the turning point. The point where you're in a whole different movie.
And the middle point is something extreme happens, like a really bad setback, or someone gets fired, or, you know, an exciting big new turn of events that usually sets the hero way back, or it can amp the movie up in a new direction, like in Legally Blonde. It was, she gets the internship.
What's going on?
Callahan's firm is defending a murder trial. His caseload is so big, he's taking on first-year interns.
He picked them already?
And then she, like, embarks on this whole trial. So that's like, okay, now the movie is actually becoming about that.
Could the midpoint be no turning back? They now tell everyone. They don't get fired, but everyone, like, I don't know. There's a they go like, no, we're together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. If the cat's out of the bag.
That's a good idea. That's a really good idea.
And then they're like, that's kind of also changes everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the cat's out of the bag and we get this beautiful moment of them being like in love and having fun on set and everything's great, you know? Mm-hmm. But then the bad guys close in. The bad guys in this case are their self-sabotaging ways, mm-hmm. right? They're really like their relationship sabotaging yeah. ways. And then this all climactically leads to a breakup.
Yes. Great.
So, by the end of Act Two, Greg and Catalina are deeply in love, but Catalina breaks it off because of her insecurities, manifested in her jealousy of Salma Hayek. Which brings us to Act Three and the climax, the moment the heroes pass from their greatest darkness towards their greatest triumph. So, there's a tenet in screenplay writing, which is that the climax of your film should be the worst place in the world for this character. Right. So the Death Star is the worst place in the philosophical stakes of this whole piece.
Yeah.
That's the worst place on Earth. So I think what I've been thinking about is the worst place on Earth for Catalina is, I guess, a party, like a Hollywood party where Salma Hayek's party.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Her. So she's in the lion's den.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
she's at Salma Hayek's party.
Yeah.
I wonder if it would be even like if there was like a more smaller version of a party. Like she's like the mm-hmm. worst place on earth would be like a dinner with Salma Hayek or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
an elevator.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like closed confines, like with mm-hmm. her beauty and her radiance and her charm.
She's serving at a restaurant.
Yeah.
And Greg and Salma are there.
That's hell.
That's fucking hell.
She has a second job.
She does now. She lost the continuity.
She fucked it all up.
Oh, she got fired for that? Fuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
That sucks for her. That's great.
Serving Salma Hayek would be like, yeah, hell.
Or she's like a cater waiter at the party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Catering jobs can be so like, you're wearing a stupid little tie. Mm-hmm. You look terrible.
The climax usually includes some kind of grand romantic gesture, but to get to this gesture of love, Catalina has to love herself first. The trap here, obviously, is running to the airport. I saw Salma Hayek. She's short, okay?
Yeah.
And I realized she wasn't anything like me, you know? Like, yeah. Well, how do we not do that?
Could Salma Hayek be sage and wise?
I think Salma Hayek should be, like, even cooler and better than she imagined. And mm-hmm. but somehow that's okay. Like, I don't know. I don't know how that fixes anything. But I think we just go against that mm-hmm. idea that, like, she sees her and then she's like, I'm better than that.
What if they have a really nice time together?
Yeah. Her and Selma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. And it, like,
and she, Selma knows who she is.
Yeah.
Like, Greg talks about you.
Yeah, all of these things start to fall into place. She's not threatened, in fact, like...
That can be also quite a rock... We could have kind of a funny fun time with her and Selma.
Yeah.
Catalina confronts Selma Hayek and realizes she's a wonderful person. Just like Greg said she was. He was never hiding anything. Catalina then has to recognize that this was her issue to overcome. After meeting Selma, she's finally able to love herself and try to get Greg back.
That's great.
Quite a lot of work we've done, I think. This is a good...
It's a shape. Starting. It has never been a shape before. This is a shape.
I love barfing out a shape because then we have something to...
Absolutely. Nice job on the color coordination, Maddie.
Obviously, this is all subject to change. Guys, we're only on episode 4 of this podcast. We've got a lot more to iron out. But now, we're going to bring things back to where this episode started. Setting.
Granville Island, known to be the most romantic place in Vancouver.
We took our field trip to Granville Island to help inspire a discussion about where to set our movie. But the truth is, we've kind of had our minds made up about where to set it for a while now, even when we were trying to decide on a job for Catalina.
So she lives outside of Chicago and she runs a You Pick Apple Orchard.
It's called You Pick 'em, I Eat 'em, and she eats every apple that somebody picks.
Chicago, the windy city. Why do we like it? Well, it's a big American city. It's got tons of things for our characters to do. Baseball games, restaurants, museums, beaches. We also don't want it to be New York or LA, where it's probably pretty common to have an ex-girlfriend who's a celebrity.
I don't know why I wanted to set it in the States, just because maybe I wanted to make like an international release and like who wants to watch a movie about Vancouver, BC.
But there is one thing that Granville Island shares with Chicago. They're both on bodies of water. And what floats on water and can also host an A-list Hollywood party? Rentable by the hour party ships, of course. The idea of the pirate ship got so lodged in our brain, so much so that we wanted to use it. What if Catalina has to work on this pirate ship after she gets fired from the continuity job? And that is where she finally meets Selma while dressed in a full pirate costume.
She's doing continuity on the pirate ship.
Maybe it doesn't exactly add up. Why would a pirate ship represent rock bottom for her? It's not like the polar opposite of what she was doing before. Okay, so still some things to iron out, but we like the direction this is going. Okay, wow, big week. We built a roster of side characters, we figured out the setting of the movie, and we even learned about Selma Hayek. We've almost made too much progress. You're probably like, you've changed. It's like you're a completely different person. I don't even know you anymore. Well, that's some pretty cliche dialogue. And cliche dialogue is what we're trying to avoid. I found this hard and embarrassing, and it gave me a lot less faith that we could pull off this rom-com because I was like, this is my real life where I was completely unbridled, and it's just awful. It's insane. That's next week on Let's Make a Rom-Com. Let's Make a Rom-Com is a production of CBC Podcasts and Kelly and Kelly, hosted by Maddie Kelly, Mark Chavez, and Ryan Beal, and created by Kelly and Kelly. This episode is written and produced by Dave Shimka, Chris Kelly, and Max Collins. Coordinating producer, Lauren Berkovich. Associate producer, Rebecca Pang. For CBC, Jeff Turner is our senior producer. Executive producers are Cecil Fernandez and Chris Oak. And RF Noorani is the director of CBC Podcasts. Our theme song is by Chris Kelly and Colin Cowan. Special thanks to Karin Soni.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.